From Value Invest Asia, this is The Asian Mavericks. We explore the hidden stories of successful founders, business leaders, and investors in Asia. Here's your host, Stanley Lim.
This month, we'll be talking to Dr. Tan Chong Khoi from Firm Asset Management. Firm Asset is an asset management company based out of Singapore and Malaysia. It also manages some of the best performing funds in the past 20 years in the region. In fact, in 2015, their ASEAN fund is awarded by Thomson Reuters as the best in its class in the past 20 years. Dr. Tan is also the first Malaysian fund managers to be appointed by the Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund as one of its external managers. As his peak, Firm Asset manages more than 5 billion ringgit in total. I have spoken to Dr. Tan in many occasions, and he is actually featured in our book, Value Investing in Asia. In my opinion, what can I say about Dr. Tan is that he is really the George Soros of Malaysia. He has shown again and again an uncanny ability to read the market, which has helped him tremendously throughout his career and weathered through many, many crises and came out stronger. This is Dr. Tan, and this is his story. Enjoy.
Well, my name is Tan Chong Khoi. Our company name is Firm Asset Management. Okay. We have two companies. Mm-hmm. We started in 1994 in Malaysia, which is called Firm Asset Management Sdn. Bhd.
Yep.
We started Firm Asset Management Asia Private Limited in Singapore in 1995. Mm. That's 1 year later.
Ah, okay. Thank you very much. I think Firm Asset Management is quite a well-known name, especially in Malaysia, I would say. People might really be interested in you as a founder to understand, you know, how you're able to grow this business and become one of the best fund managers in the region. Basically, if we go back in time, can you maybe give us an idea? How were you like as a kid when you're growing up? Were you a very optimistic and very cheerful kid, or how were you like?
I was born in a humble family. My parents has 9 kids. Wow. I rank 8 out of 9. I always think I have the worst position in the sense that my younger brother is very handsome, charming, you know, all my brother like him a lot and I can't touch him, you know. I hardly can go against my elders who are bigger than me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, my parents is good. They treat me just the same as any of the kids. Mm-hmm. So I grown up quite happily, and I was always told that I should be nice to people. And that's how in the long run you can get business.
Right. That's interesting. And having this entrepreneur spirit in you, were you always entrepreneur since young, or how did that came about? Do you see yourself as entrepreneur since young?
No, when I was young, I was just, you know, we were hardly having a lot of basic need met, you know. Mm-hmm. So I was not as entrepreneurial in that sense, you know. I just, when I was young, I remember I just thought, you know, if I can get an accounting job, you know, I would be quite happy, you know. I can survive, you know. But when I grow up, I beginning to feel that, beginning to see people, see how other entrepreneurs work very hard and become very successful, and I always very interested to find out all these entrepreneurs who have make it, you know, from nowhere, you know. I wish I saw I would be one of them. Uh-huh. That's really the motivation for me to learn a bit more, to try to hope that I will be one of them.
You know? Right. Okay. And when did that bug really started?
I should thank my wife. You know, I met my wife when I was only 16 years old, and I begin to feel that their family are so much well off, you know. They are all graduates, you know. Mm. So I'm beginning to feel that, you know, I better work harder. Mm. I should try myself to get a degree, try to work hard, you know, and be one of the better husband, better entrepreneur.
Right. Okay.
And that's how it started.
Ah, okay. And when you
I was not so ambitious and I was very young.
I see. And when you go into the university, how do you choose your faculty and how do you end up with finance?
I noticed that I like to analyze data and information. So when I go into the university, I did quite well in my maths, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in the third year of the university, I beginning to feel that I think I should go into finance.
Okay.
And then when I found out that investment analysis is what I like better, and I did very well in all my finance and investment courses, so that's how I feel that I should dip into my strength.
Right.
In fact, even today, you know, when I recruit anybody,
mm-hmm.
One of the key formula is that we try to tap into the strength of all our staff, because if you do that, you generally do better. You know, you should go into things that you have a strength. You know?
Ah, okay. Well, you're very analytical since very young.
Yeah, since very young. But that's because you are in a very humble position. You know, you want to go up, you have to be very careful.
Right.
And you have to make sure that you make no mistake, you know. So, and you can't afford to make mistakes. So, right. So in that sense, I was very careful.
Mm. And after you graduate, where did you go? Where's your first job that you landed with?
All the times I wanted to be in the portfolio management, you know. Mm. I find that is what I like to do, and that's my strength, you know. But somehow I just was not lucky, you know. So I managed to get into a commercial bank.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I was there for 1 year and I was not so happy.
Because
it's quite routine, you know.
Right, okay.
Although it gives you a good salary, but that's not what I like to do. So one day, well, I was looking at a newspaper, you know.
Mm.
And I noticed that this company, say it's an investment company, you know. Investment banking, you know, it was involved in investment banking. They advertise for an analyst job.
Okay.
And I noticed that they have been putting the ad 3 times in a row. Obviously, I thought it's either they can't, it's very, natural to assume that the boss is either very difficult and he still couldn't find anybody. So I went and applied for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very lucky, you know, I actually got the job.
Ah, okay.
The day after I came back, the secretary called me up. He said, if you want the job, you know, you get that job.
Wow, okay.
So I was very happy. I realized that this company is very interesting. This company, C-Corp, owned the first unit trust company in Malaysia. And also own the first unit trust company in Singapore.
Right.
And in the old day, you know, you don't have the computer to store your data.
Mm-hmm.
And this company is the only few company I know. They ask the staff to cut the newspaper every day and file it up in the storeroom.
Wow.
I still remember after I joined them, I went to the storeroom and dig up all those data, which is very hard for you to get, except
yep.
the stock exchange.
Okay.
So stock exchange, as well as this company,
mm.
has a lot of data for me to analyze. Oh. So I was there for 4 years and 7 months.
Right.
Okay. I was very happy, you know, I built myself a little bit name, you know,
mm.
and I wrote an article in the Stock Exchange Monday magazine.
Okay.
Almost every year I wrote one, you know.
Wow, okay.
Then I was still not too happy, because before I joined this company, actually my ambition is to join a merchant bank.
Mm.
But since I cannot get into the merchant bank, this is almost the second best.
Mm.
So, but C-Corp, after I think over, I think it's the best job that I get, because even if I go to the merchant bank, they don't have that kind of data for me to analyze.
Yep. Okay.
And C-Corp provide that.
Right.
So 4 years, 7 months later, somebody noticed me.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So one day I also look at another newspaper. I read newspaper almost every day. So the newspaper said there are 3 merchant banks looking to start an investment department in 1981, when the market was at the highest point. So I was talking to my broker. Certainly, there are 3, you know, for me to apply. And I one time I wanted to apply, I couldn't get them.
Okay.
Then the guy said, I know the largest merchant bank very well. So I say, if you know him well, why don't you arrange for the meeting?
Yeah.
I went for the meeting. And I got the job.
Ah, okay.
I suddenly become the first investment head for the largest merchant bank.
Wow.
Oh, okay. That was... So I already almost make up my mind, whatever it happened, I'm going to stay there for a long time to make sure that I build it up. So I built the company from 2 people to 65 after 7.25 years.
Wow. Okay.
Now, I've been building the company from fresh, you know. So I remember before I left, there are 8 fund managers work under me.
Okay.
And 1987 was the most important year. It was my first breakthrough. I was the market was so hot, you know. So I was basically practicing value investing. Without knowing that, sometimes value investing also don't work. You know, sometimes the share can go so high. You know? But it was very high. I sold the shares.
Right. Okay.
Which a lot of people said, why are you selling the shares? You know, when everybody is coming in, you know. I say when the market is hot, the share will go up. A lot of people will get very... That's not the way to manage fund. So I sold 65% of the share across the board.
Wow. Okay. And keep
I was lucky,
everything
actually.
In cash.
Yeah. And a lot of clients complained, you know.
Yeah.
Then I was lucky, you know. I was just testing, you know. October the 19th, the market crashed. So suddenly, I realized that our fund has performed very well because we already have so much cash, we didn't lose so much money. Assuming you're 90% or 95% invested, you would have lost a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had 35% share. So we lost a lot more. But on the other hand, you must remember, the guy who's 95% invested, he has no cash to buy shares.
Yep. Yep.
And sometimes the guy come and redeem, you got more problem. You got more problem. You not only don't have the money to buy share, you have to sell your share that you own, you know.
Yeah.
So what happened is that I turn around and I say, okay, this is the long-term fund that I have. So I'm going to buy because it's just so cheap. Some share dropped 70%, 80%, even 90%. So we, instead of keeping cash now, we go in and buy. After October 19, the market, we may go into recession for 3 years, you know, or the economy may slow down for a long time. But I said, look, the share has dropped so much, you know, I'm buying for long term. So instead, we actually go in and buy the shares. So that was my first success.
Wow, okay.
Practicing strictly to value investing, because one of the very important points I want to mention is that the most difficult part is to sense when the market is too high, you know, and you should reduce exposure even though you underperform the index. This is the most difficult part.
Yep.
When the market is going up, if you are practicing value investing, you will reduce your exposure. But when you reduce your exposure and the market continue to go up, you will underperform.
Yep.
Now, for a fund manager to temporarily underperform, many of them are not willing to do so. This year, you notice that when market was very high, a lot of people also don't sell shares.
Yeah.
And we actually was a bit lucky. We reduced our cash position.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, no. We reduced our equity position. Sorry.
Talking about
so we
that,
raised
marking,
cash.
Yeah. Marking timing. How were you able to, you know kind of spot when is the market getting really hot, and how long are you able to hold on to it if it continues to go up?
It's not easy to do, but at some point you can feel it.
Mm.
I give you another more recent example.
Mm.
In the first half of 2014, the oil prices go up to above 100.
Mm.
And you notice that all the oil and gas shares in Malaysia, Singapore, many of them, their P/E ratio will go from 7 to like 30, you know. And at 30, their earning is already jumped a lot.
Mm.
And you most probably will feel that it is difficult for them to continue that kind of growth.
Mm.
In fact, one of the success is that we reduce our oil and gas stock almost to the minimum.
Right.
So in the second half, when the oil price start dropping, we suddenly realized that our ranking become top, you know, because we don't have the oil and gas stock, you know.
Yes.
And those who not only have oil and gas stock, they overweight the oil and gas stock. I think that's a big headache, you know. So then we also felt that in 2015, we continue to have very, very low oil and gas stock. Despite that, the share has dropped, because we thought the share may just drop even more. So some of them who average, you see, when it come down, you average, it can go down another 50%. So that's where, you know, investing is an art. No, you can say we are a bit lucky. You can also say that, you know, when they are at the high point, you may really want to look for another cheaper stock.
Okay. Yeah, your investment strategy has definitely worked for many, many decades now. Maybe talking a little bit back on not just your investment record, but also starting the business in the merchant bank, right? You're almost one of the pioneers in building up the investment industry in Malaysia through, when you say the merchant bank, Arab Malaysia MBank right now. How did you take on the challenge? When you first started, how does the industry look like? And you know, how were you able to build up the whole industry as a whole?
Okay, I think I'm also a bit lucky, you know. And in life, you need to have a formula. As far as you are fund manager, formula to make money. On the other hand, you must also know how to do marketing. I was actually very, very lucky, because I think soon after I joined Arab Malaysian, at that time it was called Arab Malaysian Merchant Bank. They've changed the name now to M Banks, M Investment Bank. So Datuk Malik Marikan, who is a pioneer in merchant banking and who has a very good integrity and has a degree from Oxford and Cambridge, you know, and he is a person who whom the market feel is the man who can be trusted and give your money to him.
Right.
So he came in to join, and he got almost all the institution in town to come in. Like, for example, he brought in EBF, and then he convinced Social Security to put the first dollar in equity, and then we also managed to get Felda, we also managed to do Tebong Haji, Armed Forces, who else, even Malaysian Airlines System, pension funds, you know. We almost get all the important institution in town, and when we got the money from them, it was like after Pan L, you know, and the market was at the lowest point. And then when it come to 1987, I sold the share, and then I go back and I continue to grow. So we were really having a very good times, you know, in growing. So you can also contribute the success to that is value investing. Not only value investing, how do you handle the volatility of Asian market? In order to handle that well, is that there's no perfect formula, but one of the way to handle it well is to have our philosophy in the sense that you should not fully invest at all time.
Right.
Because if you fully invest at all time, it means that when the market is at the highest point, you're still fully invest. That is very, very dangerous.
Right.
Because when the market fall, first, it takes some time to fall. Secondly, it takes another few years to come up. So that is the biggest damage. So the very important point is that in this volatility environment, volatile environment, you know, you need to sell when the market is at the high point. Otherwise, I would like to compare, if you do that and compare with you fully invest, even in the long run, I think not fully invest at all time will do better than fully invest at all time.
Right. Okay.
You understand? Yep. Not fully invest at all time will do better than fully invest at all time. So you in between, you need to fine tune again, sector wise, industry and all this, you know. So knowledge also become very important.
Right. Okay. And always understand.
And then after that, you have to, you know, continue to do your in-house research, you know.
Okay. Wow. Speaking of that, after you have been quite very successful in building up the fund in MBank, you left Malaysia, I think, in 1988.
Correct.
Come to Singapore. Why did you choose to come here?
I noticed that in Malaysia, while we have a lot of money to manage in which we are very profitable, I felt that at that time, Malaysia at that time is still very introvert. You're basically just invest in Malaysia. So after being named the, you know, top fund manager for the pension fund, the largest headhunting company. At that time, is the managing director of Korn Ferry, is called Yang Kwan Seng. So he said, hey, he has a client who wanted to get you to become their, to lead their investment department. I found out that it was actually a German bank. You know? So I was thinking over that, you know, there are two things. First is that they are more international. So you get to expose yourself. If you want to be a good fund manager, you got to go out to the world. You know? So this guy is very keen to have me. I was really quite honored. You know? So he said, you name me any price, we'll get you to come in. Say all your transport, all your immigration, I will sort it out all for you, you know. And so I was quite lucky. I came in, I get a chance to go regional, because at that time we basically only manage Malaysia and Singapore.
I see.
So when you come to Singapore, you can then go to ASEAN, you can then go to Hong Kong and China easily. That's what I did.
Right.
So I was quite happy. So I joined these German banks. They promised to start a fund, you know, 100 million to invest in the region.
Okay.
What is very interesting is, what is very different is that 2 years later, they still haven't started one. So I ended up with doing quite a bit of private banking.
Okay.
And I make it profitable because of my experience, you know. I still can get quite a number of clients. But that's not what I want to do. Although he allowed me to manage clients' money freely, but that's not institutional money.
Right, I understand.
But still quite sizable. We make it profitable. So certainly another London-based asset management company come along. So they offer me as the first director of investment management department.
Okay.
So I thought that would be easier. So they have a Malaysia fund, small cap, 70 million US.
Okay.
They also have a first Sustec fund, 30 million US. And then they also have a Warren fund.
Oh, okay.
So I thought that is my strength, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fund manager, I'm an equity fund manager. So they suddenly come up with these three funds for me to manage. I was quite keen.
Wow.
So I then, 2 years later, I joined this asset management company. So I was a bit lucky, you know. I won a Micropel Award for Malaysia Fund, 1992.
Mm-hmm.
Although 1993, I left in November. 1993, I helped to manage this Sustec Fund and also win Micropel Award.
Wow. Okay.
Then that bring to Bank Negara attention. Bank Negara wanted to start the boutique fund management industry. So they contacted me to ask if I'm interested to come back and then join force with my former boss, Dr. Malik Marikan, who is due to retire. You know. So I was a bit surprised because at that time it's not easy for an individual to get a license.
Exactly,
And our license is very unique at that time. Right from the start, we are allowed to invest overseas. That is very, very difficult to get, you know. So I joined force, then Dr. Malik Marikan become my shareholders. And we now team back again, you know. I used to work for him for 5.5 years. So he also helped us to build the company.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. When Bank Negara contacted you to come back to start Film Asset, do you have any concern about starting your own fund, or you're quite optimistic and quite positive that you can make it work?
It's a risk, it's a risk. But I think if you ask me, that is an entrepreneurial decision. Now, why I say that? Before I left, I was offered also to start an asset management company in Singapore.
I see.
You know, because I'm very known in building new company, you know, new division, new company. But my supporter told me, my first two supporter told me that it will be a mistake to work for the giants, you know. You should strike out on your own because the clients think that I can do the job. So in the last minute, actually, I decided that I will take up this new license and go back, you know. We were lucky at the beginning. We have a very humble start. But subsequently, actually, at that time, you know, I was very lucky. I bring in a lot of clients.
Right, okay. So,
and in fact, my first institutional clients was actually GIC.
Okay.
That is quite a... And we did very well for them for the first 3 years. That gave us a very good head start, you know.
Right, okay.
And we did very well for them. And that also is very good for us. 3 years later, when did we get EPF? Because the EPF requirement is that you must start your company for 3 years before they can give us any money. Since our first 3 year record was so good, so we were lucky then to have EPF coming in on April Fool, 1997.
So at the beginning when you first started your company, there was no institutional investment?
One of the decision to come back was that we have two individual supporter. One of them are Singaporean, they are family office. And they say they will give us some money. And one of them is an individual entrepreneur.
I see. Okay.
Who used to own multi-purpose. And then he sold it off later on. Luckily, you know, all these people stay with us for a long, long time.
I see. Okay.
In fact, my first client are still with us today.
Wow.
That is more than 25 years. My second client was with us more than 12 years. That's because his family office, parent passed away.
And so at the beginning, how long did it take you to you know, raise the enough money that you feel that it's sustainable and it's quite a good size for you? At the beginning, do you mind sharing? At the
I think when you are boutique in the old days, if you're 100 million, you can survive. Mm. But our case is quite unique in the sense that we built in the performance bonus. Uh-huh. And our first 3 years, we did very well. Mm-hmm. So we built up the reserves.
I see.
So that's where, you know, so every bull run, if you lock it in, and you are able to catch out and you protect yourself. So every 3-4 years, if you know how to protect yourself, you did very well.
Wow.
Well, we survived for 25 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, our Malaysian office, touch wood, you know, we are profitable every year for 25 years.
Wow. Wow.
That's a very good record. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And actually, if you want to start a boutique, if you yourself is a good fund manager, it will be an advantage. Just that you open a restaurant.
Mm.
If you are a chief cook yourself, you know, you are a bit more. You can control your costs a bit better.
But talking about that, do you think that it's harder or easier now to start a boutique fund compared to during your time? Certainly, the competition is much higher now. Would you say?
But I think you must manage your costs now. But I think you must also have some clients to support you. You know, to have at least some size. You know, then you if you control your costs and you view yourself as a good stock picker, you view yourself as a good fund manager. Yeah, then you can. And you do need a bit of luck, to have a good start.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the good start is very important.
Mm.
The bad start, you need more luck to come back. You know? That's I think. I would rate myself very lucky. First, I have two very strong supporters.
Mm-hmm.
Then subsequently, I got institution. And then my investment philosophy helped.
Mm.
You know, we are not only good stock picker, we are also able to read the market right, and then to get out. And this philosophy that you never fully invest at all time really helped us a lot.
I see. You're talking about reading the market during the Asian financial crisis. Can you tell us your experience over that time? How do you see the market?
If you study carefully, the market runs up a lot in 1997. And if your stock pick is good, you can reduce your equity exposure and still outperform.
Okay.
And that's your biggest advantage. Once you know that you are able to outperform with a reduced equity exposure, do that.
Wow.
Stay low. Okay. Because just in case the guy crash, you have the cash to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? 97 by coincidence, all the crash come with the strong rising market one, most of the time.
Yes.
So at that during that time, you must be willing to underperform.
Right.
Get out a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy. It's not easy. Then in between, you need. Let's say if you are 70% invested. And your stock pick is good, you still outperform, that's the ideal position. Then when the market crash, right, you have 30%, you know.
But how were you able to do that?
Okay.
With less exposure, but still outperform?
Some of your stock pick, you can imagine, you know. Especially when the market is at the lowest point, that make a significant difference. When they are at the lowest, you buy at the cheapest. And I give you an example. When the 97 crash, to go to tax bubble 2000, that's only 2 years. You make a lot of money.
During that short period.
It's a very cheap. Especially, I can remember 97 was so bad, that's Asian crisis. Many of the share dropped 90%.
Wow.
And you bought them, they can go back again, you know. That means it's... I remember the top three pick we make in 1997. It's 7.5 times, 10 times, and 14 or 15 times within 2 years, you know.
Wow.
That shows how important it is to sell out and then let the market go down and then buy at the lowest again. But you must have the cash. So not fully invest, never fully invest at all time is a very good philosophy.
Maybe bringing that philosophy to the current time as well. Do you mind maybe sharing some of your investment right now that over the past few years has done very well for you, and how do you see them?
The best example, more recent one, was second half last year towards February this year. You can see the market, US market, is performing quite well, you know. And it's performing, also their profits are doing quite well. But they no longer like rising sharply, you know.
Okay.
They steadily go up, but they are economically, US are still doing quite well, you know. So they drive the market up to the max in February this year. Now in February there was 1 or 2 weeks which the market go up quite sharply. In fact, that was the time people should also catch up.
I see. How do you spot that?
And ETF sometimes can make it worse. When the market is good, the ETF is performing very well.
Yeah.
And every day there's a subscription, they just go and buy the big cap.
Yeah.
So they go up. But the minute it cracks, like now, you notice that ETF is no longer performing that well. Although actually, the index stock also, the non-index stock also don't perform that well.
Yeah.
No? So you need to figure out a bit, you know. So sometimes value investing give you a guidance, you know. When they are too high, you get out. And then you have cash, right?
Yep.
When the price keep on dropping. But like coincident, Malaysia dropped very sharply.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get a chance to buy them, you know.
Okay. Yeah, talking about that, I think some of your recent investment like Inari, Amatron, and also Hibiscus, do you mind sharing your thesis or how do you see them? How were you able to spot them that they are on a recovery trend? Or
Hibiscus is very interesting because if I'm not mistaken, Hibiscus listed at the price of 75 cents. Go up all the way to $2.70+. And without profit.
Yeah.
But they have no gearing. That's very interesting. Without profit, but they have no gearing.
Yeah. Okay.
So they invested because they must make sure they invest enough. Otherwise, 3 years later, I think they are not allowed to continue.
Yes.
So they invested. But the first few investment is not so good. The shares start dropping. Towards the end of it, the share was traded. I remember when they came to see us, they were trying to do a placement because banks do not like to have so much exposure to oil and gas. So they could potentially a victim.
I see.
You know, they may withdraw their line and all that. So the best thing for them to do is to do a rights issue. So they came to see us. On the day when it was traded at 20 cents, from $2.70+, you know, you're talking about more than 90% disappeared.
Yeah.
I look at the company, I thought the company has no gearing. And then they recently, at that time, and second half of 2016, around second half 2016, they have then invest in an oil field in the North Sea.
Right.
And that company give them some profit. But they are just beginning to move profit.
Okay.
And the share tank. So I thought it was very cheap. So they give us, they did a placement 10% discount at 18 cents.
Okay.
So we took them.
I see. Okay.
Yesterday was 93 cents.
And you're still invested in
them? We still have the share.
Yeah,
so that is the beauty of a crisis. They are so cheap. So what is very key is that our investment philosophy or our investment criteria is that the gearing must be low for us to invest. Mm. And the company must be able to grow. And the management must be good.
Must be strong.
You know, must have gone through. The CEO is a pioneer in oil and gas. You know. Mm-hmm. We were lucky, you know, this is one of the killer.
Right.
But we actually subsequently buy even more later on. The first batch was we took at 18 cents.
Right. Okay.
Then we bought some more at a higher price. But not, it's still much lower than price.
I see, okay. And for your style of strategy, for looking at stocks, do you also feel that, you know, after the current change of government in Malaysia, you see that a lot of the previous government-linked companies has tanked quite a lot. Do you potentially see them as opportunity as well, or how do you view that?
Crisis is an opportunity, but you must see that potentially the company is going to grow. Mm. You read it right, you make a lot of money. Because as you can see, quite a number of companies drop more than 50% just within 1 week, you know, within a short time. But you must try to analyze to make sure that these people will come back. Mm. So then you will be taking a longer term view. Mm-hmm. Will it go down further before it goes up? It's very hard to read. You sell the share, it go down. Then your ability to read how other people is going to behave is also very important. So investment is an art. Investment is in some sense very need you to know a bit more about the psychology of investor.
Yeah, to predict what the market will react.
Because whoever, whether they're individual or institution, if they sell the share, it goes down. Mm-hmm. So market psychology become important. Mm. But it seldom the crisis came. It goes down sharply. If the company has very low gearing, make sure that they don't hide in their associate company. If you believe that, they will be able to survive. Mm. The management is good. Mm. And they should be able to turn around. You normally can make good money.
I see. Wow, that's an interesting strategy right there.
No guarantee. but we have done it a few times.
In 2015, you actually published and wrote a book, Rising Above Financial Storm. It's a very, very interesting read. But I just want to ask you, you know, what motivates you to start writing that book?
If you are in the fund management for so long, you know, and if you have a good track record, and I think a good long-term track record make a very big difference, because your long years of a good track record is a testimonial that you have done well. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to share your experience with people, the people who read your book will benefit. So when I did very well in 1987, Then I already have more than 10 over years experience. Mm-hmm. I was quite keen to write. Mm. But then I felt nobody will buy my book, because the years of experience is just too short. Mm. In another occasion, 1997, that is even much later.
10 years later,
I felt that I also did very well in 1997 and 98. Mm. At that time, we already managing EPF money out of firm asset management, you know. And I remember 1997, we outperformed the benchmark set by them by more than 29%.
Wow.
And 1998 is even better. 1998, we outperformed another 36.
Mm-hmm.
So then also, I also felt that I should write a book.
Mm.
But I still give up. You know why? At that time, I felt that the number of years of experience from firm asset management, forget about including Arab Malaysian, because those are very hard to track the record, you know. Because I went to DG and I went to John Gobert, you know.
Yes.
So those are very short term.
Yeah.
So when it comes to 97, 98, although I did so well, but that's only first, that's only Malaysia only.
Mm.
Number two, it's only 5 years from firm asset management. Although, if you go back to 1987, I have longer years, but those are patchy, you know.
Yes.
So I felt if Peter Lynch managed Magellan Fund for 13 years, this 5 years Malaysia only, who's going to read your book, you know? So I actually give up. But you know, I have in mind.
I see. Okay.
It's only when I get to 2010, I felt that that will be a better time, 2010, because 2010, our ASEAN fund was ranked number one by Morningstar from 1 year to 15 years.
Mm.
And that time, nobody has that record.
Mm.
And that's credible.
Mm.
That time, I really seriously say, hey, hello, I better think about it very carefully. I gave up again in 2011 because we lost the court case.
Mm.
And it was just not impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Then 12, 13, 14, we did very well.
Mm.
Our ASEAN fund is ranked number one by Thomson Reuters. On the day of our 20th anniversary, February the 8th, number one for 1 to 20 years, which also nobody will have that.
Yeah.
On our 20th anniversary, February the 3rd, 2015, when Thomson Reuters informed us that we were number one, 1 to 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, that few months I already... so our book was out on the fourth quarter of 2015.
Yes, wow. So the book is really almost 25 years in the making.
It's very long years, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought people would have enjoyed reading our experience. Like, you know, when I first start going to India in 2001, we start going to Taiwan, Korea, Hong Kong, China. We've been around for a long time. Although we are particularly strong in ASEAN, you know, we are also, it's long enough for you to share your experience with people.
Yeah, definitely.
How we prove to people that, you know, just never fully invest, and our investment criteria, how we pick stock. You know?
Yeah, definitely. You give a lot of actual example in the books on how you decide on the
but the book doesn't include hibiscus.
Yeah.
Also, we have other killer, Penta Master, which we bought 2 years recently, also up, you know, from the first day we bought, you know, it's up like 900%.
Yeah.
So, but unfortunately, it's not heavyweight enough, you know. But hibiscus is heavyweight.
Yeah, well, that's very, very interesting.
And also, the other one was Inari. In Inari also, we were lucky. We come in Inari at a very low price, and then also within of 2 years, you know, we or three years, you know, we also make more than 500%.
Yeah, that was
so,
a very
so
very
that was
good
also pick. So last few years, every year we seem to have won. Hibiscus in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
I think Inari was 2014.
Yeah,
I think.
When you share with us your whole wide range of experience, you seems to have kickstart almost the entire investment industry here in Singapore and Malaysia, and also building up your firm asset management. What are you looking forward right now? You know, what is the plan for you? It seems that you have achieved already so much in this industry. How are you pushing firm asset management forward?
Life is changing, you know, actually very interesting. Life is changing. When I first started, you know, you're talking about 25 years ago, you feel less confident, but you're very courageous. You know, nothing to lose. You just go in. Today, by right, we have much longer track record, much more experience, much longer history, you know. So I was telling myself, it's the client that you can get to make you able to survive even better. By right, we should be much more experienced than before. Mm. I would say we should not take it lightly also. The market is volatile, it's changing. Mm. We still need to be very careful. But we are strongly believe if your long-term surplus fund, equity is one of the best for you to put in your money and also property, as long as you don't go and buy them at the highest point. And in between, you may get caught every now and then, but you practice your philosophy, you practice your investment criteria. In the long run, I think you should be able to beat the fixed deposit by a very big margin.
Definitely.
So that's my strong belief.
I see.
And the other thing, of course, although it's difficult, you know, as an entrepreneur, your happiness is that you create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although, we create about 28 jobs, you know, it's not a big number.
Mm-hmm.
But for people who want to learn, we are one of the very few, you know, who's willing to train the young graduate. Many of the people, they are never given an opportunity.
Mm.
And we give them.
Well,
although we didn't pay them very well, but we give them a good start.
Mm.
The most difficult, I tell you, hundreds of thousands of people who want to be a fund manager. But when you're new, you can't even get inside.
Yeah. You have definitely shown that, you know, not just as a fund manager, but also as a businessman, that if you're consistent and you know, stay on to it for a long term, you definitely can find success in life. But if I ask you, you know, if you were to go back 20, 30 years ago to your younger self right now, what advice would you give your younger self right now if you're going to start all over again? You know, how would you do things differently?
I can only share my experience, to be fair. I think do what you like is very important, because that is the one that gives you a lot of stamina.
Mm-hmm.
Because you like it. You know, you like it, so you will continue. So that is a good start. But stamina, mental strength is also very important. You need a lot of mental strength. And you also need luck. So, but if you have luck, you can compromise the rest, you know. But hopefully you have all of them, because luck doesn't come unless you also have a capability.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a formula, you also have a integrity, you also have this thing to perform.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that people who have surplus money, long-term surplus money, going into equity is not a bad option. So.
Mm. Wow.
And choose a fund manager that you think you can trust.
Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us, Dr. Tan. Once again, Dr. Tan from Firm Asset Management, founder and CEO. Thank you very much, Dr. Tan. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. To get the latest notification on our upcoming podcast, do subscribe to us on our YouTube or on iTunes and wherever you get your podcasts. You can just search Value Invest Asia or the title of our podcast, The Asian Mavericks. If you like this episode, I hope you rate and review us on iTunes, and I'll see you guys real soon.